Welcome to The Mortgage Voice with Jeff Barton, your voice in the mortgage industry. Each week on this program, Jeff and his guests share their expertise, personal anecdotes, and the latest industry news to keep you in the loop. Now, to provide you with insight and help you navigate the consistently changing world of real estate lending, here is your host for The Mortgage Voice, Jeff Barton.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Jeff Barton. This is The Mortgage Voice, and you are listening to me on the radio on the weekends, and I appreciate you listening. Listen, if you want to see us, hear us, if you want to know what we're doing, we've got a number of ways you can do that. If you go to YouTube, Jeff Barton, The Mortgage Voice on YouTube, you can see this show as well as hundreds of others. We are also linked into any number of different podcasts, whether it's Stitcher, Spreaker, Apple, Google, Podclips.io, and as I said, YouTube. All of these things carry our show as well as our five different radio stations in three different states. The show itself is always looking for ways by which we can deliver news about what's happening in the mortgage market as well as the real estate market as quickly and easily as possible. If you need to go to any of these sites, do it. Also, themortgagevoice.com. You can see many of the guests that are on the show there, and if you want to contact them, you can contact them directly, or you can hear and see different clips of the show, mortgagevoice.com. I'm Jeff Barton. This is The Mortgage Voice. Thanks for listening in. Okay, busy week. Lots of things going on. Like the weather, the mortgage market seems to change daily, and one of the reasons it changes because of the volatility in both the recessionary pressures that we might be seeing if, in fact, we can't get inflation under control and they up the wattage on the stimulus reduction, i.e. they raise the rates. If they raise the rates too high, too fast, you're going to get a recession, and that's a problem. This is the balancing act that the Fed is doing right now, which is why you see mortgage interest rates hovering 4%. 30-year fixed. That's what they're doing. What are you going to do if you're out there right now and you're trying to figure out if you can afford a house? You're figuring it on today's rate, right? The base rate of today, let's say 4% at a 30-year fixed. You've got just enough for a 20% down payment on a house, but those prices on those houses are going to raise by, I don't know, 1%, 2% every month. It's probably not 2%, but certainly 1%. I think the average real estate last year was up at least 11, 12%. That's on a national basis. Some markets even more. I have a list of these that are really hot real estate markets that I want to share with you a little bit later in the show. But the winds of change and how they affect, yes, that's one element. Another element, what's going on in Ukraine? I don't know if anyone's been watching the mortgage market or watching the bond market. When things looked like war, I don't know if they look like war today or not, but they're a little less looking like it today than they did yesterday. But yesterday and the day before and the day before that, it looked like it was an inevitable way that we were going to have to deal with it. So the mortgage market is based on the 10-year. People rushed to the 10-year, the 30-year, the 2-year, and bought a lot of American, a lot of U.S. bonds. And when that happens, the yield goes down. Well, when the Soviets, we'll call them the Soviets, actually Russia, when they decided this time to say, hey, you know what, maybe they're not going to invade. Maybe we should just do a little bit more of a negotiation. What happened to the bond? The bonds went back up because people stopped flooding their money to the bonds. As I said 2 weeks ago, when there's a cataclysmic event, people come to the U.S. bond market because it's a safe haven. It'll drive down the mortgage prices. So are we into wanting more because it'll make our house payment cheaper? No, that's ridiculous. But that is what happens. So it reversed a little bit. Now, when you see movement in the fact of 10 to 15 to 20 basis points on a daily basis, that's a big, big deal. When you're dealing in billions and billions of dollars, which is what floods the mortgage market, the bond market, mortgage-backed security market when world events happen negatively, and that was what was happening, still may happen. But we've got both the inflationary pressures and what's happening in Ukraine really affecting what's going on in the bond market. And as you watch the 10-year, Because the 10-year will become more a basis by which you can make sure that the mortgage interest rate is what it is. We're currently over, let's get to this for right now. Okay, the 30-year fix is at 4.12%, 3.35% for the 15, 3.75% for the FHA, 3.55 for the jumbo, and 3.73 for the 5-1 ARM. All those numbers are at least a point higher than they were 2.5, 3 months ago. Everybody knows it, and they're going to continue to go higher. The yield on the 10-year is above 2%. That is a big number. The yield on the 10-year is above 2%. 18 months ago, it was at 0.43%. Unbelievable. But that's what happens. When we're worried about inflation, we know that interest rates are going to go up 5 times maybe this year. 5 times. There are some. Here, let me see where it is. I'll just off the top of my head. There are some in the Fed. A couple of the Fed board governors that say, hey, we have to front load this thing, meaning a half a point hike right now in order to be able to stop inflation. Because inflation in the West is the worst thing politically to the administration. Now, in China, and we've talked about it many, many times, they're doing the exact opposite. So the question is, if China is adding stimulus, is making the financial requirement to be a bank, like they have here in the U.S. after the mortgage meltdown in 2008, it was a big deal that the banks had to have a certain reserve requirement that they had to meet. And they had the stress test. Remember the stress tests? And it was, you know, a lot of financial institutions. Now it's really whittled down to about 6 or 7 of them, the big banks. The stress test, right? Do you have enough financial reserves to cover the requirement that the Fed and the Treasury is making you have? Well, in China, they're reversing that. They're lowering the requirements, the financial requirements that you have to keep in your bank, the amount of money that you have to keep in your bank, they're lowering that. So they're adding to stimulus. So they're more concerned with growth than they are inflation. They're more concerned with keeping their growth rate at, you know, above 10%, currently at about 4.5%, which is low for them. They've been for a decade more at 10 to 15% per year. So that's what China's interested in doing, keeping the ball rolling. Here in the West, they're much more interested in inflation. Why? Because we are here already. We already are the economies, the advanced economies of the world, if you're talking about Europe and if you're talking about North America. Absolutely. So for countries like that, they don't want to lose their purchasing power. For countries like China, they want to grow their purchasing power, which means growth of the economy. Here in the U.S. and in the Western countries of Europe, it's more about making sure that the money you have doesn't lose value. Heck, if inflation, part of that inflation is about jobs and about getting more money for the job that you have, and you begin to lose value based on inflation, well, what's the point of getting a raise at the job? You got to make sure that the raises that you're keeping, that you're getting, you're keeping. And it's not being whittled away by inflation. All of these things are very, very important to what's happening in the mortgage market. The differences between what goes on in one part of the world, what goes on here, the flight to U.S. securities when there is volatility or the threat of war or inflation, and how we bring to the U.S. markets, because they're open markets, they're not a closed market. A lot of markets around the world won't allow that kind of free flow of capital in and out. Matter of fact, one of the things that they're thinking about doing in China right now, because of the fact that the Chinese bond is at 0.83. Well, the U.S. bonds are at 2.035. Well, where, if you're a Chinese billionaire, where are you going to put your money? In bonds in China? Heck no. So they've got some issues there in terms of their own bonds. They're having weakness in their own bond sales, so they're going to have to up the actual the yield on their own bonds. I read about that today, and I went, wow, this is a complex math problem, and I've never been good at math to try to figure out, okay, what does all this mean to me? I'm trying to buy a house, and it's now at 4%. Does that mean in 2 months it's going to be 4.5%? Is it going to be 4.25%? Are we going to see war in the Ukraine, and so it'll drive down the cost or the price of bonds here in the U.S.? These are all things that are very important and also very important to watch, because as you try to figure out when to lock your loan And I always say in an ascending rate market, lock as soon as you can. You can always relock it, resubmit, but locking as soon as you can to get the lowest rate possible is the best way. I want to talk about a few other things. Anyway, I'm Jeff Barton. I'm your voice in the mortgage industry. Thanks very much for listening in, and we'll be right back.
You're listening to The Mortgage Voice with Jeff Barton. We'll be right back with more in just a moment. For more information on today's topic, email Jeff Barton at info@malibufunding.net. Now, back to The Mortgage Voice with your host, Jeff Barton.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Jeff Barton, your voice in the mortgage industry. Thanks very much for tuning in, listening to the show each and every week. We try to bring you the best in what's going on in the mortgage industry, as well as some topics and things that affect both your family, what's happening in the world around you. It's not all dollars and cents when we're talking about housing and mortgages. A lot of it has to do with where you live, what you're doing, the safety, and whether it's safety in your neighborhood with Neighborhood Watch or safety online for you and your kids. We bring this information because it's important. It's important for you to know about it. It's important for us to be able to deliver that. And it affects where you live and what you want to be able to communicate to those that you love about those situations. Back to the show once again. It's been a while. Ed Peisner, he's with the Organization for Social Media Safety, and that's his nonprofit as well as his website. He's telling me he's doing a lot of exciting things, talking with the masks coming off. Ed, how are you?
Good, Jeff. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. And again, I can't thank you enough for coming on to the show, talk about this again. Appreciate it.
My pleasure, of course. My pleasure. Thank you for always having me and inviting me on.
No, no problem. Okay, let's talk a little nuts and bolts, just because I think a lot of people don't know about this. There's so much online, especially during the last 2 years, that's negative and bad and hurtful and causes irreparable harm. But the way that you look at it, attack it, and deliver your message is mainly to high school students. Is that right?
Middle and high school, we're focused on, so the organization is focused on educating students from middle to high school. And actually, now we're sort of going into the fifth grade as well, so we're really hitting elementary as well.
Okay.
Educating them on social media safety.
Okay.
And really, it's two parts, Jeff. Real simply put, it's proactive and reactive. It's what to do proactively to keep your child safe on social media, and then how to respond to one of the dangers that exists out there should something happen or arise with your child. It's how do you react? What do you do? I was thrust into that.
Yep.
Due to what happened to my son, was the whole reason why we started the nonprofit. And what we determined was, as we were building this nonprofit, is that because of the sheer newness of social media and all of this, there wasn't really a comprehensive plan out there for social media safety. Like, what do you do? And we developed a plan and a safety course. And now I go to schools all over the country, and I do an hour presentation to the kids. I sort of, you know, unfortunately, I start with the story about Jordan.
Yep.
And then we discuss the dangers that are lurking within the world of social media that some parents and kids alike, even educators, principals, they're just not aware of. So we point them out. You know, we address the dangers, we discuss what they look like, and then how do we react to them should something happen.
And what is the reception? I assume that parents and teachers love it. How do the kids react?
You know, yes, the parents and teachers love it. You know, the parents and teachers love it because, as I mentioned, there really isn't any comprehensive course out there. So,
right.
Like myself, you know, personal experience, when my kids were younger, they got phones, and if I needed to figure something out, I'd go to the internet, I tack around, you know, figuring, hey, who's got a good tip on this or that? So the parents and teachers love it because we have this course now on our website. The students, believe it or not, Jeff, the students all come up to me afterwards. I always get a warm reception from them. Unfortunately, I haven't been to a school yet where I haven't had a student come up and say, you know what happened to me?
Oh.
Thank you for being here. This happened to me. It cuts across all demographics.
Yep.
You know, it doesn't stop. It's everywhere. And one of my the PowerPoint presentation bullet points that I put up on the screen for parents and students is a slide that says, right now, in our country, suicide is the second leading cause of death for teenagers.
Yep.
And I leave it on the screen, and the kids all look at it, and the parents look at it, and say, you know, we now know that a lot of that is due to social media time. Time kids are spending on social media where they feel the negative effects, or they see the hate speech, or they compare themselves to what they see online, which we all know everything online is fake.
Yeah.
You know, everybody posts the perfect world, but in reality, it's just not that way.
No, it's not that way. Now, quick question for you. You ever get somebody who has been the aggressor or bully or, you know, perpetrator to come up to you and say, thanks, I never knew how this affected people? Do you ever get one of those? Or?
You know, yeah, few and far between. Not as much as the kids that were the actual victims. But I have had a few kids come up and say, after your presentation, I didn't realize that something I had sent to a friend of mine was considered cyberbullying. Because I go through all, you know, what cyberbullying can look like.
Right.
And, you know, it can look different, you know. And so that I have this one instance I'm remembering where a child came up to me and thanked me for making him aware that what he did was actually cyberbullying, and he's, you know, thankful that I pointed it out to him. So it's things like that that really help.
You know, it's obviously a topic that is, you know, right now, I think it's a continuing irritant and to people who, I guess, have to deal online all the time and are constantly getting bombarded with negative messaging. But for a kid who hasn't got the perspective of an adult, it's way more than that. It's just, it's crushing. And so how do you deal emotionally with these during your presentation with that particular aspect?
You broke up at the very end. Say that again.
Just how do you deal with the emotional aspect of that part of it?
It's hard.
Yeah.
Listen, it does. I get chills sometimes talking. I get a lump in my throat talking to these kids. And what I really like about this presentation, and I tell the kids from the very beginning, I'm not here to lecture you. I'm here as a human being and a father. I'm here to talk to you. Let's have an open conversation. Let's discuss. And they do actually, it's interactive. They have these little remote controls I give them where they can answer some questions anonymously.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the big things that I see is the hate speech now. Hate speech is so apparent all over social media and the internet. But, you know, all over social media we see hate speech, and it's becoming normalized to these kids. And that's part of the conversation piece I have with them. And I always end my presentation on that part with, if you went home today and there was some really bad hate speech written on your front door, I don't think you would just look at it, you know, open your front door, look at the hate speech, and walk in your house and shut the door. You would want to get that removed from your front door because it's hurtful and other people could see it. And that's the same mentality, that critical thinking piece, that I want these kids to do when they see hate speech on social media. Let's get it removed. Let's report it. Let's get this off of the social media platforms so that somebody else doesn't see it, because it could trigger something that could lead to self-harm or worse.
Okay,
so really becoming critical thinkers about what we see and not absorbing it and becoming normalized behavior.
So action is really the motivate. You're trying to motivate kids to get out there and do something, but the internet itself drives kids inside by themselves. How do you figure that out?
You know, it's the, to me, it all begins at home with the parents.
Right.
The when we do our surveys, and we've collected thousands upon thousands of data points from kids all over the country, the average time online for a child on social media is between 7 and 9 hours.
Oh, that's unbelievable.
So
a day?
That can't be monitored a day, per day.
Wow.
That's the average. 7 to 9 hours per day is what we're coming up with. National surveys on this.
Yeah.
So it is hard for a parent to monitor the time a child spends online. I try to point out features on their phones that allow them to monitor their own time. Because ultimately, I don't think any child wants to be on their phone, addicted to their phone for 7, 8, 9 hours a day.
Right.
So I try to show them where they can monitor their own time and make them accountable for their own time. But it does begin at home. Look, these phones belong to us as parents. They do not belong to our children.
Hey, Ed, we're up against it. I want to let people really soak this in, but how do they get in touch with you, especially if they want to put on a presentation at their own school or want to know more about it?
Sure. Two ways. The easiest way, go to our website, which is www.OS, like Frank, S like Sam, N like Mary, S like Sam.org. And that, of course, is just the initials for Organization for Social Media Safety. So they can go to the website and just click a booking right there. They can email me, ed@OSSMS.org. Those are the two easiest ways to get hold of me.
Okay.
And, you know, again, I'm flying out this month. I'm going to Virginia at the end of the month for a week. I'm doing a whole district out there.
Great. Great.
Any help I could be, I'm always here.
I wish you the best, because this is absolutely needed all the time, especially with kids. 7 to 9 hours, that's going to stick with me all night. Ed, thank you very much for coming on the show once again. Great, great interview, great information.
You're welcome, Jeff. Great to hear your voice and talk to you soon.
Thank you, and I'll talk to you real soon. Okay, that's Ed Peisner for the Organization for Social Media Safety. I'm Jeff Barton, your voice in the mortgage industry. We'll be right back.
Listening to The Mortgage Voice with Jeff Barton. We'll be right back with more in just a moment. For more information on today's topic, email Jeff Barton at info@MalibuFunding.net. Now, back to The Mortgage Voice with your host, Jeff Barton.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Jeff Barton, your voice in the mortgage industry. Thanks very much for tuning in to the show, listening to what we do each and every day on the show. We're on 5 radio stations in 3 different states. Some of the markets that we're in, Albuquerque, New Mexico. We're up in Las Vegas, Nevada, in Central California, and also down in Southern California at one of our big stations, KCAA, KMET, down there. We really appreciate all the people. Certainly up in Tahoe, love it all. If you want to listen to us, you can do that at all those radio stations. We're also on YouTube. If you go to YouTube, Jeff Barton, The Mortgage Voice, check in, sign up, and we can have you delivered this show each and every week. Click on that you like it, gets more people to see it, and also gets the message out of what we're trying to do to tell people about what's going on in the mortgage industry and the mortgage market. To that end, back with the show once again. Terrific guest, knows more about mortgages than I will, probably has forgotten more about mortgages than I'll ever know. Livier Becerra for Malibu Funding. Livier, how are you?
Good, Jeff. I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. Okay, you're juggling a massive portfolio of loans. You are raising child, and you are, did you buy a house last year? You were kind of busy.
I was, but there were some issues with the house, so I pulled out of the escrow.
Oh, okay. Well, then I'm sorry. I didn't mean to bring that up. I thought it was a...
Oh, no, I have a couple others, so it's okay.
Good, excellent. Okay, your advice to people trying to buy a house right now is?
I'm sorry, what was the question?
Your advice for people trying to buy a house right now. What would you tell them?
Well, you know, it's hard to say. You know, if we could forecast that, you know, wow. But, I mean, if you read, you know, it depends on what you're reading, actually. Some people are projecting for the next 3 years, the market's going to be strong. And then if you look at maybe rates going up, you know, you might see a trend. Maybe the market's starting to, you know, even up, you know, stop, you know, maybe
right.
down a little bit, stabilize. But, you know, we could just, it's hard to say. I mean, you're more of an expert in that than I am. What do you think?
Well, it's interesting that you say everything that you just said I agree with, because we just don't know what's happening with rates. If you could say, look, we're going to have 4% for the rest of the year, I could begin to say, all right, fine. So this is the way the mortgage shapes up when it's 4%. But we don't know if that's true. We don't know if there's a worldwide event which will drive people to the bond market, driving interest rates back down again. We don't know if it's going to go back up because of the raising of the interest rates on bank notes and bank loans. We just don't know. But the real estate itself is still pretty scarce.
It's supply and demand, no supply.
Right. That's exactly right. And I think it prices a lot of people at the low end out of the market completely.
It really has. And even, especially, I mean, even with the rates low, with the,
right.
the market shooting up as it did, they just, you know, most of them say, you know what, forget this. I'm just going to wait this out and wait till this, you know, this stuff comes down. But, you know, that they might be waiting a while.
Yeah, exactly. And I think, and as I always tell people, look, if you can afford a payment, it's really a good time to get in, because as the market conditions improve or worsen, The prices are going to go up and down, but at one point you are going to see the price you bought the house at probably in the rearview mirror. And so I always say, you know, real estate.
It is, because it's already gained $100,000 in equity from, you know, 8 months ago.
Right, exactly. Right.
I should have just repaired the things myself. But it is what it is, you know, it's hindsight. But, you know, who knows what's going to happen.
Right.
I mean, it's very interesting, though.
What are the programs that you see as most in demand for a loan? Is it the 30-year fixed still? Is it FHA? Where are we headed? Non-QM?
Well, amazingly, everybody has money now. Everybody making purchases, you know, got $100,000 or $200,000 to put down, you know.
But
there is still, you know, quite a few FHA, but as the market goes up again, you know, they might have to raise the conforming limits again.
Yep.
So, but what I think is going to be interesting is HELOCs. I mean, everybody has a 2-point-something, you know, rate, and nobody wants to give it up.
Nobody.
So they might be looking at taking out a HELOC instead.
Right, right. No, I agree with that. I like HELOCs. We used to do a ton of them, and then they went away. So it's just a matter of, okay, if you have, like you say, a really low interest rate, and there were millions of people who got in at under 3%, which is unbelievable. Even now, they're not even that bad. But when comparing to 2%, 2.5%, HELOCs are the way to go. Have you done them? Are you back in that market yourself?
I am. I'm starting to get into them. Only, you know, for a while they went away. There was no need. You can refinance and put it all together. Who needs a HELOC?
Right.
So now it just seems like now I'm getting more and more requests for HELOCs, which, you know, there are some that are pretty aggressive. They're pretty good. You know, you only have to, you know, pay. You know, it's cheaper than the credit cards, you know. If you wanted to, you know, if you did any type of improvements on your house and you used your credit cards, and, you know, they're pretty up there. So a HELOC, you know, anywhere from 8 to 10% is still good. And then I think before they were down to 4, 5, 6%, depending on, you know, the loan to value or your scores. But they're still very, you know, they're pretty good. But then eventually you and I both know it'll get too much and everybody will have to refinance again.
Right. Well, especially with equity in your property, I mean, this whole market that we're in right now really is, it's centered on equity, building equity in your home. And even if you have low payment, so if you want to take money out, you can do a HELOC. It's like you say, you're going to have to refinance the house. Maybe you're refinancing at 4.5, but if your equity still increases, and that's the issue for me, will it still increase? Can we get inflation under control so that the increases don't get eaten away by the inflation? And how does this really affect somebody's ability to pay or repay if we've got stagnant wage growth? I don't know if that's true, but these are the things I think about when I go to sleep at night.
Yeah, that is true. Well, I remember when I first got in the business 20 years ago, there were times it was like, you know, it's not allowed anymore, but you had like, you know, 8 people on the loan.
Right. Oh, yeah. Right.
Now they're limited to 4. But there were times when, you know, families had to get together, pull together, and try to qualify.
Right. No, I think, yeah, I mean, income itself, it's interesting. I look at the national charts about where the employment is going, where it's coming. I see that there's millions of jobs going unfulfilled, yet unemployment is really low. So it's confusing to me because I'm very used to looking at the way the national or state trends go in employment and go, okay, this is a percentage of people that can afford a house. It's just a very unsure time for me because I don't know, one, where the rates go, two, the house prices, and three, what employment's doing, the three big things that really make or break a loan.
Yes, that is true, and especially for self-employed too.
Right.
You know, now that the non-QM loans are reentering and coming, they're aggressive. So those are actually not looking too bad, even though the rates have gone up. They're still very aggressive right now, helping those who, you know, don't show all their income on the taxes, but have a lot of deposits. Or, you know, I'm sorry, I got an echo in the back.
No, you know, the echo that you hear is not being recorded, so it's good. So you're good with that. It is a little disconcerting because it hits me too. I know.
Oh, it doesn't. Okay.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so other than the 30-year and the non-QM, do you see FHA making a bit of a and what you said was interesting because raising the conforming limits is going to have to happen, especially if people want to get an FHA loan, because a lot of people being priced out of the market at 20% down can't afford a house.
Yeah, and what's really interesting about it, you know, FHA is still great, but if you go to people who want down payment assistance,
right,
the rate just shot up to a point higher. So you're talking almost 5% for down payment assistance.
Oh, I didn't know.
And those poor people are not going to be able to qualify.
Wow, I did not. That just happened? Oh, my. I didn't know that. I knew non-QM went up last week, almost a point in like a week.
Right. I think the lowest for, like, if you want the 3% back on the CalSTRS, it's like 4.625. I mean, it's up there.
Wow, that is up there. Listen, we're up against it. Could you let people know how to get in touch with a terrific loan officer here in Southern California? It would be great.
Sure. My phone number is 626-712-9920. I know my name is Hart Levere, but you can call me Liv.
Liv.
And I'd be happy to help.
Thank you, Levere. Really appreciate it. Thanks for coming on the show. As always, good information, good talk. Thank you.
Thanks for the invite, Jeff.
Thank
you. Have a good day.
Thank you, too. And I'm Jeff Barton, your voice in the mortgage industry. We'll be right back.
You're listening to The Mortgage Voice with Jeff Barton. We'll be right back with more in just a moment. For more information on today's topic, email Jeff Barton at info@malibufunding.net. Now, back to The Mortgage Voice with your host, Jeff Barton.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Jeff Barton, your voice in the mortgage industry. Thanks very much for tuning in, for listening to the show. We are on a number of different radio stations, podcasts, and you certainly can go to our website, Jeff Barton, The Mortgage Voice, or themortgagevoice.com. When you go to themortgagevoice.com, you can see and hear what we do, see our guests, contact our guests through the, how do they do that? They go to the contacts. The guest page?
They can go to the website and look at the video, and below the video will be the name and contact information.
No, I've been there and I've done it. I just couldn't remember for the life of me whether it was a link or whether it was an email or whether it was a phone number. I just...
It's a posting both on themortgagevoice.com and on YouTube.
Okay, excellent. Anyway, thank you again, once again, for coming on the show. For my guests who do appear every week, we probably do, I don't know, 300-400 guests a year that come on the show, talk about mortgages, talk about what's going on in the economy. It's interesting because the perspective that you get from a professional who's in the business is quite a bit different than someone who is trying. For instance, every time we talk about real estate, and I'm dealing in real estate constantly because first mortgages are what we do, you get people who are professionals in all lines of business, doctors, lawyers, IT people, corporate executives, janitors, you know, all walks of life, all different types of economic backgrounds and certainly the way they do the job. When they talk about housing, they talk about it as if it's the only thing in the world that really they control. It's like they lose the perspective of professionalism and talk about their property, if they're a seller, like it's the best thing, the greatest thing, or if they're a buyer, I'm only interested in getting the best deal possible. Why is that? It's a very strange industry in that you don't get people who have the same perspective in their professional life when they're talking about it. It's like people who are in love. You can talk about other people's relationships all day long, but once you start talking about your own, you kind of lose perspective. It's very similar to that way with housing. I don't know why that is, but it does make the guests that we come on the show interesting in the fact that they too, being professionals, have a perspective on how different problems get solved. And solving problems is really what the mortgage industry is all about. You come to somebody, you say, look, I make this, here's my credit score, and I think I want to buy that house. How do you get that brief scenario submitted as a loan package to be approved for a loan at a rate and payment you want to pay and get it closed in 30 days? That is an art form. That's not science. That's trying to pick programs, banks, lenders, and types and qualities of loans that you want to get per individual. That's an amazing thing. And the people that we bring on each and every week who do that on a consistent basis have a terrific way by which they can help you. And if, you know, like I say, you come to Malibu Funding or you go to 100 other people who are in your area that you know, and they'll give you the same type of service. It's a very, very unusual and interesting business, and that I think if you're out there and you're listening, you go, hey, how do I get into this? Yes, you can get into this. It's not that difficult. It's passing tests and getting experience. Like any job, you start at the bottom and you work your way up. Probably within 3 to 5 years, you're making pretty good money, especially in a mortgage market like this when we have low interest rates. Okay, let's get into a little bit more of the news to use section. We talked a little bit about Zillow, a little bit about lumber prices, but a couple other things. In the news, there was a very, I'm going to laugh because I think it's silly. Obviously, it's not silly to those people who get busted. So there was a 26-state bust of this horrendous crime of continuing education fraud. Okay? Anybody out there who's a professional, I have degrees in a number of different areas, certificates, and they all require that you go to continuing education, you sit in front of a computer, or you go to a live course, and you do 2, 3, 5, 20, 50 hours. Well, in the mortgage industry, you have to do 10 hours a year. That's what you got to do, 10 hours a year. It takes 20 hours to get the license, 10 hours a year you have to do. So in these 26 states, what was happening is that they were finding companies that would just give them the certificate if they paid them a little bit more money. Okay? So states' attorney generals in 26 states, the federal government, and the NMLS all found, I don't know, there was 300 to 500 loan officers who fraudulently receive their particular continuing education credits. Now, if you are one of these people who have been in one of these classes, you know that they are the most boring, uneducational. It's like going to a bad restaurant. Yeah, you got to eat because you're hungry, but you really don't like it. Well, that's kind of how the mortgage industry looks at continuing education. Anyway, all these people got busted. They're going to go, I don't know. So some of them are like getting fined. Some of them may end up in jail. It's just a mess. And I always wonder what. I don't know. There's got to be a better way to do it. There's a lot of things the government does that are great and great for people. For instance, financing couldn't be done without FHA, VA, or without Ginnie Mae and Freddie Mac. Just couldn't, or Fannie Mae. Just couldn't happen. So these are all quasi-government things that we really need in order to keep the mortgage market moving. However, the punitive way that they look at loan officers as if somehow they're the worst people in the world, and now they've so much to owe that the states that they are organizing to go after them for continuing education, you know, fraud, the millions of dollars they must have done for this, to me, it's a minor crime. However, it does scare me into not doing that, so maybe that's a good thing. I, too, am a loan officer, 79687, that's my NLS number. Redfin, okay, Redfin is a company that everyone knows. They are a real estate company. Well, they have gone to a different model. We're talking about different ways that the industry works and how real estate companies and mortgage companies work. We talked about iBuying, which was a W-2-based system that Zillow kicked out the window, but there are other iBuying models out there. Redfin is a real estate company that is going W-2. And what does that mean? They're going to pay everybody who works for them a salary. You have to be licensed in order to obviously do real estate deals in whatever area that you're in. But it's a new model. It's a way by which they're saying, okay, we see the commissions out there as something we want to capture as a company, and we'll give you a salary of XYZ. Now, in a down market, this is a great model because people want to get paid, right? But in a down model, a number of years whereby real estate isn't selling well, real estate prices are depressed, yes, you can see somebody wanting to be a W-2 employee, i.e. I get a salary. But in an upmarket where you can make money, I don't understand it. But anyway, that's a model that they're using. If you're out there and you want to get into the real estate world and this is something that looks attractive to you, call Redfin. They're hiring. Let's see. What else have we got here in the news to use? Okay, I was talking a little bit earlier about real estate markets, some of the hottest real estate markets in the country. Well, I'm going to give you the top five, and it's going to surprise you who they are, because you don't necessarily think of hot real estate market in, let's say, the number five market is in Boulder, Colorado. Interesting that Colorado is an interesting state in and of itself. Boulder being a college town, obviously that's one of the reasons that they've got a constant replenishing of rental markets, but the buyer's market is incredibly hot. Number four is Rochester, New York. Rochester. Now, Rochester, New York is another interesting upstate New York, kind of near Buffalo. in that area. I've been there, played hockey there many, many, many years ago. Interesting. Number three is Topeka, Kansas. Now, you can see these are all the secondary cities that you might not necessarily think of as a hot real estate market. You'd think New York, Miami, Houston, San Francisco, Los Angeles, Seattle, you know, all these types of cities. Nope, these are the hottest. And when I say hot, I mean less time on market. So in the number one city, which I'll tell you in a second, 33 days on market is the average. And that's really low. Number two is Santa Cruz, California. California is in every survey somewhere. So Santa Cruz makes it as the second hottest city in the market. And the number one overall hottest city in America is Manchester, Nashua, New Hampshire. Manchester, New Hampshire. Anybody want to live there? I don't want to live there, but it's the hottest real estate market in the country. 33% days on market, 33 days is their days on market, and the real estate prices went up 11.1% last year. Anyway, I'm Jeff Barton. I'm your voice in the mortgage industry. Appreciate you listening. We'll be right back.
You're listening to The Mortgage Voice with Jeff Barton. We'll be right back with more in just a moment. For more information on today's topic, email Jeff Barton at info@malibufunding.net. Now, back to The Mortgage Voice with your host, Jeff Barton.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Jeff Barton, your voice in the mortgage industry. Thanks very much for tuning in, listening to the show each and every week. If you want to catch our show, you can go to many of the podcasts that we're on. We're on Spreaker and Stitcher. And what else are we on there, Daryl?
Well, there's a bunch of them.
Okay, great.
Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Spreaker, Stitcher, iHeartMedia, Radio.com, YouTube, and Podclips.io.
Excellent. Podclips.io, great place to go and catch a number of different varieties of podcasts, whether it's lifestyle, sports, whether it's finance, whether it's, cooking, a lot of different things. You can go there. Many, many new and interesting people are on there talking about what exactly their expertise is. I'm in the finance section, Jeff Barton, The Mortgage Voice. Look me up, and you can find us there at any time. Also, themortgagevoice.com. If you go there, you can see this episode as well as many others on there, as well as the guests on the show. You want to look somebody up, find them, talk to them on the phone. You can find their contact information there. Go to mortgagevoice.com. I'm Jeff Barton. This is The Mortgage Voice. Okay, we've been talking a lot about what's going on in the mortgage space from a macro standpoint. Let's get a little bit local in the news to use section. The Zillow. Zillow sold. Remember Zillow got out of the iBuying business? The iBuying business is a business whereby a company will buy any home and then fix it up and sell it, kind of like a flipper business, except on a grand scale. And Zillow, because they're a huge public company, well, they were doing it. And then they decided, we made a big mistake. We're getting out of the business. And they had some 18, 19,000 houses that they were sitting on their books, unsold, and that they had purchased, and they were looking at trillions, not trillions, but billions of dollars worth of debt. Well, apparently, and that was only a couple of months ago, apparently they've sold about half of their inventory of 18,000 houses, which is making Zillow a very attractive stock. Is Zillow a way by which you can say, hey, you know what? Let's get into the flipping business. Let's find something that we can actually look to buy, fix up, and sell. I agree. I think it is a good business. However, when Zillow gets into this kind of business, who are they selling these properties to? They were trying to look for one, two, three, maybe four buyers, and I think they did find that, and I think it got a lot of their financial, and also because the market's going up, a lot of their financial problems that they were having as a result of the iBuying business model that went bad have really disappeared, and they have about 10,000 houses left. What they're going to do with them, very interesting. Go to Zillow. Maybe you can pick up a sniff of where these houses are and get yourself a good deal. Let's see. Lumber prices way up. Three times that of pre-pandemic levels, although 30% less than the highs that they were at $1,600 a 1,000 square feet of board. That's the way they price these things. So lumber prices have been going up lately. Why? Because there's just such demand, and a lot of the home builders in the U.S., especially, you know, the big ones, Pulte and KB and, I just can't remember it right now. There's about six or seven massive home builders in the U.S. who would like to roll tracks, but they're not doing it because of the pricing. They say that as a result of wood going up to this price, $18,000 more it's going to cost you in your home. which is not a good thing. Let's see. The bonds, the mortgage market in Russia, Ukraine, we got into that a little bit earlier. Let's see. The change year over year from 21 to 22 in the mortgage market, what are the numbers? I'll go through them with you. Conventional loans are down 11.5% from this time last year. FHA is down 62%. Now, FHA is a way by which people who can't afford more than 3.5% down to get into the housing market. This tells you with rising interest rates, which is really killing the lower end of the market, 62% of the FHA market is now not what it was a year ago. The VA is down 33%. And cash buyers are flat. The overall mortgage market in terms of applications and closings is down 21% year over year. So this time, February last year, we were doing 21% more business than we were doing now. What does that translate into? Higher rates. I mean, come on, last year at this time, they were 3%, 2.75. So the difference between that and what we have today is probably 8, 9 million less people that can afford to buy. So unless you've got down payment assistance programs, FHA looks like it can't even hold the water in terms of helping people get into the marketplace. What happens in these situations? You're going to see non-QM, less documentation. You're going to see more people looking for DSCR, that's that debt service. When you want to buy a house as an investment property, you use the potential rent in order to qualify for the loan. You're going to see a lot more of that. You're going to see business bank statement loans. If you have a business and you're a sole proprietor and you're out there and you're making pretty good money, but you only pay yourself, you know, a minimal amount, you can use your business bank statements as a way to qualify for the mortgage. That's going to happen. There's the I-10. There's a lot of different programs, but they're going to become more prevalent in the marketplace because obviously people have to be able to qualify for a loan if they can't qualify at mom and pop bank down the street. Oh, interesting thing. There's a list. Okay, I'm going to go through that list right now. There's a list of about 20 different lenders, top lenders in the country. And the difference between a bank being your lender and a mortgage banker being your lender. One is a depository institution, and one is not. So a company like Rocket, they don't have bank deposits. They're a mortgage lender. Rocket is the number one mortgage lender in the U.S. A non-depository bank is the number one mortgage lender in the U.S. PennyMac, also a non-depository, is a second on that list. United Wholesale, non-depository, third. The first depository is Wells Fargo. That's number four. Number five is Chase, NewRez, Loan Depot, et cetera, et cetera. Now, why is this important? Well, a lot of these mortgage bankers, these independent mortgage bankers, what they call IMBs, they've changed the marketplace. They've changed the way loans are gotten. They're huge companies. They're public companies. A lot of these companies like United Wholesale, Rocket Mortgage, NewRez, Loan Depot, where's another one? Home Point Financial, I think they're all public. They're much like their big bank friends, Wells Fargo, Bank of America. Why is that important to you? Because as companies go public, they become beholden to the shareholders. Smaller mortgage broker companies really don't count. You're looking at companies that do an aggregate of 1 million loans a year, 500,000 loans a year, 50,000, 100,000 loans a year. These companies matter to you if they sell directly to Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, and they're a non-depository and non-public. They are less prone to be pushed around when profits aren't good and the shareholders are determining what happens to the internal structures and the loan structures. That's important. But what's happened right now is a lot of the larger mortgage institutions that are non-bank depositories are public. And that's a problem because, as I said, beholden to the shareholder versus the loan is really detrimental to you, the borrower. So when you're out there shopping for loan companies, when you're shopping for somebody to do your loan, yes, it's about your rate. But in times like this, when you've got a rising interest rate and we've got issues with how we deal with problems such as maybe a war in Ukraine, inflation, how are we going to deal with that as a depository institution that's public and a mortgage banker that's public is different than the private guy down the street who can really weather the storm a lot better. And that protects your interest rates and your interest a lot more than, let's say, these other companies. That's my opinion. It's not just my opinion. It's the opinion of a lot of other people. That's why the changing landscape in the mortgage business, when we've got huge companies like United Wholesale and Rocket really gobbling up a huge percentage of the origination, yeah, the way they're doing it is changed from it was 2-3 years ago because of them becoming public. And I think that's something to watch and to see how much they mirror Bank of America, Wells Fargo, Chase. Certainly these banks are determining the overall mortgage market for their customers, as these independent mortgage brokers that are public now are going to mirror more about what Chase and Bank of America are doing than, let's say, an independent mortgage broker or independent mortgage banker. I think those are the type of people that will really look out for your interests and can weather the storm in an upward trend when we're raising interest rates. Anyway, I'm Jeff Barton, your voice in the mortgage industry. Really appreciate you listening, and we'll see you next time.
You're listening to The Mortgage Voice with Jeff Barton. For more on today's topic, visit www.malibufunding.net.